It is that time of the year. The spooky season is upon us, and this podcast is presented by Dread Hollow. This year, it's going to be Dread Hollow Revolt with three very frightening haunts to give you a chance to get very, very, very afraid. We have Crane Toys, Blood Harvest, and Ricketts Revolt. The Crane Toys one sounds interesting, as it's going to be about a toy factory that goes horribly wrong. I love haunted houses. Haley and I go to Dread Hollow every year, and we have an absolutely bloody good time with all of the scares, all the frights, and I want to give you a chance to head to Dread Hollow yourself, you and a friend. All you have to do is shoot me a DM on Instagram telling me what the highest grossing horror movie of 1996 was. You shoot me a DM and you're one of the first people to do so. Hey, we here at ESPN 95.3 are going to hook you up with some tickets to Dread Hollow. And don't miss out. You can also win tickets on The Word with G as well as Press Row all week. So don't miss your chance to get the pants scared off of you at Dread Hollow this year.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Now you're all in big, big trouble.
Suspect.
This is how I went.
All right, we are back here for another episode of the Watch It Podcast. My favorite time of year is upon us. If you listened to yesterday's episode, you saw that we did a spooky Ultimate What to Watch guide. And I said at the end, it might not be over for the spooky guides. But did you know that you'd be getting another one just the next day? Like I said, horror movies are a very, very, very popular subgenre of movies. Well, I guess not even a subgenre, just a regular genre. But within the horror genre, there's a billion different subgenres out there that you can start to get into. And one Ultimate What to Watch guide wasn't enough. So we had to move it up to two. So here we go. We have six more movies for you today that we're going to be breaking down. If you missed last episode, go back and check that out, as we had six movies and two TV shows. No TV shows today. Yesterday, we had Haunting of Hill House and Dahmer. We also talked about Night of the Living Dead and American Werewolf in London, From Dusk Till Dawn, Cape Fear, The Shining, and Hell House LLC. We have one returning category today, or I guess two returning categories today, depending on how the question is phrased. But today's movies, just as good as the ones we covered yesterday. So without further ado, let's get into our first category, and that is going to be vampire. And there are so many different vampire movies out there. There's so many different takes on the genre. You have everything from Twilight, which, you know, it has its market. It's not personally my thing, but I'm not going to knock someone for liking it. Then you have movies like Daybreakers with Ethan Hawke, which I debated to put on this list, but I wanted to go with something a little bit more classic. And that, of course, is going to be the 1985 Fright Night.
What would you do if you accidentally discovered the house next door was occupied by something not human? Something unspeakably evil. No one believes you.
Mom, I didn't have a nightmare.
Not your mom.
They did kill a girl over there.
Not your girlfriend.
Charlie, is this some sort of a trick to get me back?
This could be the night of your life. Fright Night.
I mean, come on. I love trailers like that. I said that on the last episode of this that we did yesterday. The voice and everything, and the "this could be the best night of your life" and everything like that. Fright Night, to me, is a quintessential 80s movie. It supersedes the horror genre. To me, when I think of the 80s, this is one of the movies that comes to mind. It has one of the coolest movie posters of all time, with the cloud vampire and the creepy house. And a lot of people were introduced to this movie back in 2011 when they did the Colin Farrell remake, which there's certainly been worse remakes out there. I'm not going to say that the Fright Night remake is the worst thing I've ever seen, but compared to the original, doesn't even hold a candle, because the original Tom Holland directed, not Spider-Man Tom Holland, this is specifically the Child's Play, Tales from a Crypt, that Tom Holland that we have, is, like I said, a quintessential 80s movie when I think about it. It has all of the elements that I want to see in a kind of a chiller, like I like to call from that era. Not like the chillers from the 50s, but it has some crazy special effects that we have in here. Amazing. It has a very unique performance from a handsome guy, Chris Sarandon, who plays Jerry Dandridge, his vampire next-door neighbor. Yeah, I mean, this movie is just totally awesome for so many different reasons. You have the kid that nobody believes. I mean, that's a staple of what makes a good 80s horror movie to me, especially one that wasn't part of the massive kind of franchise-dominated era that was the 80s with things like Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, and even Child's Play, you could say, another Tom Holland creation that was born in the early 80s, kind of falls into that. So we had Fright Night. I don't believe this movie had any sequels, so it kind of stands on its own. Oh, no, correction. It did have a sequel, Fright Night Part 2. I actually haven't seen this movie, but I'm sure it's probably not as great as the original Fright Night. I'll have to give it a watch, though. But in this, it really just has it all. It's disturbing, yes, but it's not like something you can't turn on when the kids are around, you know? I mean, maybe if they're over like 10, Fright Night, slide them in there. They're going to be good. Like I said, Chris Sarandon, he does an absolutely amazing job of just playing this dickhead next door neighbor. And what this movie does well, that I'm glad this is kind of the criticism I've heard, is they wanted it to be more of a mystery if his neighbor was actually a vampire or not. They make it very clear early on that this guy straight up is a vampire. And Chris Sarandon, kind of as Jerry Dandridge, kind of torments Charlie, who's played by William Ragsdale, the whole time about how he knows he's a vampire, he's dating this guy's mom, and he's going to do it anyway. It's a really fantastic movie. I highly recommend it. Even a little bit of a movie about movies at time. So Fright Night, 1985, directed by Tom Holland. Highly recommend that you give this one a chance. All right, moving on to our next category. This one is simple. The category is just weird, bizarre, something that I normally wouldn't have watched. And anytime somebody asks me about this, this is almost about to be the point where it's not even that less of a well-known movie, but I still think we're in the territory of saying that Basket Case from 1982 is one of the weirdest fucking movies ever made.
What's in the basket?
Open it, if you dare. Basket Case.
It's really weird. So this story follows this guy. He's a nice guy, this kid. He's walking around New York City. He has a ton of cash. I mean, a ton of cash, where he's just going into these hotels, renting out rooms, and stays there. But the thing is he's carrying around a basket. He has this nice basket. He's carrying it around. Everyone's asking him, what's in the basket? What's in the basket? There's actually a drinking game where you have to take a shot every time someone asks what's in the basket. You're going to be hammered by the end of this movie if you decide to go for that. And I don't, because this is probably the lesser known of all of the movies on this list, I don't want to say on this podcast what's in the basket. But for you people who have seen this movie, which, like I said, is a growing number by the day, day by day, more people get into Basket Case, which is awesome because this is a really effective movie, to be 100% honest with you. I know it's kind of a joke in some aspects, but I actually really quite like this movie and its sequels, Basket Case 2 and 3. Not quite as good as the first Basket Case, but still pretty entertaining. But yeah, like I said, I'm not going to say that what's in the basket, but it is going to shock you. It's quite shocking. Well, what's in the basket's not exactly shocking. I mean, you figure that something really weird is going to be in the basket, but it's the truth of what the thing in the basket is and where it comes from that I thought was very creative. Even to this day, I still think it's wildly creative. And I love the use of puppetry regarding what is inside of the basket that continues to go out and out and out. So a couple fun facts about the movie Basket Case, because like I said, this is one of the lesser known movies on this list. Came out in 1982. It had such a low budget that the crew would go dumpster diving for discarded furniture and plumbing to dress the sets. That's awesome. It's really, really, really effective. I wouldn't have even thought about that because the movie to me looks pretty good. Also, most of the credits that appear at the end of the film are fake. The crew was very small, and rather than repeat names over and over again, they decided just to make up names to kind of flesh out the credits a little bit more. That's hilarious because I think of the movie Fateful Findings. If any of you guys have ever seen that, I highly doubt it. It's probably one of the worst movies ever made. It's made by this guy, Neil Breen. And you get to the credits, and it's like written and directed by Neil Breen. Produced by Neil Breen. Costumes by Neil Breen. Key grip, Neil Breen. It's just over and over and over again, they do Neil Breen. So that's very interesting. And according to the writer and director, Frank Hennenlotter, he was emboldened to make the movie because he believed that nobody would ever see it. He claims to have been horrified when it became a moderate success, and more than 30 years later after its release, it, of course, remains a cult classic among horror fans. For good reason. Like, I don't know why he didn't think people were going to see this. The cover alone, like the poster, is enough to make me want to pop this in. You can actually get a really cool copy of this from Arrow Video. Arrow Video is very similar to Criterion. Very, very similar, where they have like the special release Blu-rays and everything. And they have one for Basket Case that has it's a 4K. I don't believe it's 4K. It might just be 1080. It's a really nice restoration work that they did. It's totally awesome. Highly, highly recommend picking up that version. They also have like True Romance. And yesterday we talked about American Werewolf in London. To me, they have the definitive version of that movie. It's a 4K ultra remaster. Highly, highly recommend both of those. But Basket Case 1982, directed by Frank Hennenlotter. Let's see what Frank Hennenlotter made following Basket Case. He made Frankenhooker, haven't seen that. Brain Damage, which I actually have seen from 1988. That movie is fascinating, to say the least. It stars Rick Hurst. The tagline is a headache from hell. Nothing, though, can hold a candle to the incredibly bizarre movie. The kind of, in my opinion, a creature feature masterpiece that is Basket Case. Incredibly bizarre. If you like smaller movies like that, you're going to like Basket Case. If you like things that are just incredibly off the wall, highly recommend giving Basket Case a go. All right, moving on to our next category. This is going to be a repeat from yesterday, and that is going to be regarding the found footage genre. And there is a ton of those out there, so I don't feel bad repeating it. And here's the reality. I said this yesterday that a lot of movies in the found footage genre are just flat out not very good. They're very low budget, but as we learned just from Basket Case, that just because something's low budget doesn't mean it's bad. Not at all. That's not the case, but with found footage movies, it's just you kind of can get away with way more with that lower budget, so I like to point out movies that do something creative with its concept, and when this next movie was announced, I remember when the first trailer for this came out. And I thought this movie was a joke. I thought there was no way this was going to be good. And in some people's eyes, this movie still isn't good. But to me, Unfriended is a modern horror classic.
Maybe it's Laura.
All right, everyone, hands up right now. Who's doing this?
Oh, my God.
Yes, you're probably like, I feel like I've heard about this, but I never actually watched it. This is the Skype horror movie. I believe this came out in 2009. This was a very 2009 thing that happened. It actually was 2014, so it was way later than that, way off there. But 2014, this is going to be the story of this group of friends that are all hanging out on Skype one night when a mysterious user joins the call and mysterious circumstances begin happening to all of the kids on the call. Yeah, I like I said, remember when this came out, I thought it was a joke. No way that I think this movie was going to be any good at all. And I actually saw this in theaters when it first came out. And there was about five of us in there. We all were like, all right, all right, all right. It's a slow start. It's a slow burn. But to me, I was loving the first 20 minutes of this movie because it does something that I kind of talked about yesterday where it does the mundane to a point where you're like, this, I buy into this. You know, she's just going on Spotify. She's picking out her music. She's listening to it. You know, she's replying the text. It's effective. It's really great. And it's a great way to circumvent what was a relatively low budget. I know that this was distributed by Universal, so that adds an extra couple million just right off the pop. But, you know, anybody really could have made this movie when you think about it. And I rewatched this again recently during the COVID shutdown in 2020. And that was prior to yesterday, the first time that I had watched it since when I saw it in theaters. And it made it even better, everything that was happening there, because I'm sure we all saw the Zoom horror movie. That was very bad. It wasn't nearly as effective as Unfriended. And here's the crazy thing about Unfriended, a little two for one on this ultimate what to watch guide is 4 years later, this movie actually had a sequel called Unfriended Dark Web. Yeah. A sequel to Unfriended. I don't think many people saw this movie at all. And I'm not going to lie, the sequel to this movie was actually really good. It's not as supernatural and as horrific as the first movie, if you know what I mean, because the second one is much more grounded in reality. The second one, I feel like that's something that could actually happen. But Unfriended the Dark Web, also pretty good. So some fun facts here about Unfriended is if you go through Skype and Facebook's, all of the accounts used in the movie still exist. That's really cool. And this is my favorite Unfriended fact. I actually remember hearing about this when the movie came out, is that in order to keep the film suspenseful and believable, each script had alterations and they were made on the fly, and the cast were encouraged to improvise and react to the unexpected story changes. And when you watch this movie knowing that, it's kind of fun to go in and pick out what you have or what you could do through that. And another thing with this is, I mentioned Universal has the distribution rights, but right up until release, no studio was attached to this. So even though it was distributed by Universal, it still technically remains an independent film. And another really interesting fact about this is they originally were going to film this with the real Skype and the real Facebook and everything like that, but they did create a mock Skype interface for the film to avoid technical issues, which that's something you kind of got to do, because I know not a lot of people use Skype anymore, but back in the day, from like 2010 to 2015, Skype, at least for my friends and people I went to high school with, that dominated. That was like the place you went. It's like FaceTime now. You know how everybody, I don't know, I wouldn't say everybody, but I know a lot of people in my life, they'll FaceTime people just whenever. They'll be walking down the street and they pull out the FaceTime and they're ready to go. That's kind of like what Skype was. You'd get home from school, you'd hop on Skype, see what was going on, talk to some people, make some friends. You never know. Skype was kind of just like a wild card of what you could do. And I remember when Unfriended came out, that was kind of like the post-Skype era. But man, I just, even at the time, and even to this day, I still find Unfriended to be an extremely creative movie. So that's going to be Unfriended from 2014. Not sure who directed this one. I can't actually find it on my app I'm using here. Levon Grabadazi. I'm sure I just butchered that, like Brad Pitt and Inglourious Bastards. Nelson Graves is the writer, who I actually believe wrote something else very recently. Let's see. Yes, he's a writer on the show C with Jason Momoa on Apple TV. But yeah, Unfriended. Honestly, not a bad movie at all. Highly recommended if you skipped out on it. I know a lot of people did when it first came out. All right, we're going to take a quick step away. And when we get back, we are going to get into our final three categories. Don't go anywhere. This podcast is also presented by Agoge Combatives. Agoge Combatives is going to be the premier destination to learn mixed martial arts here in the city of Chattanooga and the Tennessee Valley. Hell, you can really come from anywhere you want, because Agoge Combatives, like I said, is the premier destination for MMA down here in Tennessee. Because at Agoge, you're going to learn real mixed martial arts from the top coaches and athletes in the region. Torres Finney, for example, he has an upcoming fight in Jorge Masvidal Masvidal's Icon Fighting Championship. He's an awesome guy. He's been on this podcast before. You can also check out Jazzy the Jasmanian Devil Sergeant. She does some kickboxing classes over there, but that's not it for Agogi. They also do Krav Maga, youth wrestling, striking, anything you can think of in mixed martial arts, they are going to have it at Agogi. If you want to learn more and see a full selection of classes, head on over to agogicombatives.com. One more time, that's agogicombatives.com. This podcast is also presented by Dread Hollow. Don't miss out on three very exciting haunts this year at Dread Hollow Revolt. It's awesome that we have such a renowned and scary haunted house, as it is consistently voted one of the top 10 haunts across the entire country. And I want to give you a chance to experience for yourself. Like I've been saying, Haley and I go every year, and I would love to see some of you guys there. So if you want to win some tickets for yourself, why don't you do this? Shoot me a DM on Instagram and tell me what the highest grossing movie of 1996 was. If you're one of the first people to message me that, I will hook you up with a pair of tickets. You can go to Dread Hollow Revolt for yourself. But if you miss out on that, don't worry at all, because The Word with G and Press Row on ESPN 95.3 are also giving you chances to go to Dread Hollow this year. And if you head on over to the ESPN 95.3 app presented by Dread Hollow or on ESPNChattanooga.com, you click the banner, enter your information, and you are in to win a pair of tickets to Dread Hollow. Don't miss out this year. Dread Hollow Revolt, located out on Browns Ferry. You do not want to miss the riveting haunts that they have each and every year. All right, we are back here on the Watch It podcast. Three more movies coming your way to recommend. One of them, a repeat category from yesterday, and that's the one that we're going to talk about now. Like I said, with found footage, there's a plethora of movies that we could talk about. And the same kind of goes for action horror. That's one of the most popular subgenres of movies, games, TV shows. Two things that go hand in hand, spooky and badass. And it's always a treat when, like, I can talk about one of the funniest movies of all time, one of the most badass movies of all time, and one of the spookiest franchises there is with Army of Darkness.
This is my boomstick. It's a 12-gauge double-barreled Remington. S-Mart's top of the line. You can find this in the sporting goods department. That's right, this sweet baby was made in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Retails for about $109.95. It's got a walnut stock, cobalt blue steel, and a hair trigger. That's right, shop smart. Shop S-Mart. You got that? Now I swear, the next one of you primates even touches me. Yeah!
Look, I know it's the least scary of all the Evil Dead movies, but it's still my favorite one, because this is when Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi, they were just going crazy with all the ideas that they had. And it's clear, because this movie is off the damn walls. So it picks up where Evil Dead 2 left off, where Ash gets sucked through a portal and he lands back in medieval times with a battle between the dead and the living occurring during this time. And he gets transported back there with his sawn-off shotgun and his chainsaw arm. And this movie is just full of incredible one-liners. Even if you've never seen this, I guarantee you that you've heard lines from this movie and you didn't even know it. Like the boomstick line that I played to introduce the movie. There's also, "Give me some sugar, baby." And then there's, of course, "Hail to the King, baby." It's just so many good things. And then it's like, there's just so many that you could quote through. I don't want to spoil some of them because it's surprising, but, you know, what this does and why I know a lot of people don't put this in the horror genre anymore, but I definitely still do, because it's, like I said, it's connected to one of the most recognizable horror franchises of all time, Evil Dead. It still has some outstanding visual effects. I mean, it's a Sam Raimi movie. What else would you be expecting? And also, it still has the deadites. And the deadites are hilarious, but at the same time, very disturbing looking. very, very, very disturbing. And it's just, there's so many good things about this movie. There's the action sequences that are the best in the entire franchise. You know, I say Sam Raimi directed this, and if you guys aren't familiar with who that is, he's most well known for doing the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man trilogy, and he recently did Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. And you can see some of the tricks that he had in the place with Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness clearly find their way into the Spider-Man movies, especially the first Spider-Man movie with Willem Dafoe. It's clear the impact of that. The POV shots, the quick close-ups from the downward angle on the side of the face, it's clear. So when you know that, watching Army of Darkness, it makes it even better in a way. Plus, Bruce Campbell, one of the funniest actors of all time. And Army of Darkness, he's just having fun in it. I've said this before on podcasts. I mentioned this in the actor stock market that we did. One of my favorite things is when I'm able to watch a movie and I can tell that the actor is just having an absolute blast in the role. And anytime Bruce Campbell is able to play Ash Williams, you can see it on his face. So Army of Darkness, which is technically the third Evil Dead movie. You don't want to miss this out. I believe that it's on Stars. You can find this streaming, but if you go over to like McKay or something, there's DVDs and Blu-rays of this everywhere. All right, so our next category is one of my favorite subgenres. That's going to be slasher movies. This person specifically requested the best 80s slasher movie. And clearly to me, that's going to be Friday the 13th, Part 4.
Jason's reign of terror is over. Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
Friday the 13th absolutely dominated the 1980s. Really, it just had a chokehold on society at that time. It was the perfect mix of a blockbuster summer movie and a horror movie at the same time. Jason Voorhees, of course, one of the most iconic slashers ever. I would even venture to say he's one of the most iconic villains or even one of the most iconic characters of all time. You see the hockey mask and you know exactly who that is going to be. He is there to tear shit up. And why I went with Friday the 13th Part 4 as opposed to any of the other ones that came out in the 1980s is Part 4, far and away to me, is the best that Friday the 13th has to offer. It's the classic Friday the 13th feel. They're at the campsite, there's counselors, there's kids running around, just getting demolished by Jason. Jason in this, he comes back from the dead in the hospital, he's got the machete, he's got everything. It is classic Friday the 13th. It is the quintessential slasher movie to me because it is 1984, right in the heart of the 80s. And plus, this has the best cast. We get a very young Corey Feldman as Tommy Jarvis in this movie. Oh yeah, Corey Feldman, he's in this. Crispin Glover is also in this, who you know probably best know from Friday the 13th. He's going to be the dad in that movie when they go back in time. And speaking of Crispin Glover, it has one of the most weird scenes in all of a Friday the 13th movie where he dances to Lion's Love is a Lie. Just cause you're playing cool. He's just dancing like an absolute madman to that song. And that's not necessarily a song I feel like a lot of people were getting down to in 1984. Maybe I'm wrong. I wasn't alive during that time. But Crispin Glover's in this. It also has just, like I said, it is the quintessential Friday the 13th movie. Because the Friday the 13th movies, where it separates itself from Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween. It separates itself from Nightmare on Elm Street because it's not quite as high concept. Nightmare on Elm Street, there's a big suspension of disbelief that goes in with that, with him invading the dreams and everything. And Halloween, after the first two, became very concerned with the lore of the franchise, to say the least, with the nephew, the niece, and everything. It really went off the rails there. Friday the 13th, as a franchise, was concerned about one thing, and that was making money. And they knew the formula that they were going to use. And Friday the 13th Part 4, as I've been saying, was the perfection of that formula. It's a quick in-and-out watch. It has some quick scares, some amazing kills in the movie, some awesome, awesome special effects in this. And, hey, if you want it to be, this could be the end of the Friday the 13th movies. You don't have to watch any more after this, as it was originally marketed as Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Of course, that wasn't how it went down, because... just just, let's see here. I believe it was just 1 year later they released Friday the 13th Part 5, A New Beginning. They did, yeah, it was just 1 year later. And the thing with Friday the 13th Part 5, Jason's not the killer. So I guess Jason didn't come back until 2 years later, and Jason Lives. I love the Friday the 13th franchise. That's something that I really want to come back. And whenever it inevitably does come back, I know that they're looking at maybe remaking it coming up here in the next year or two. I feel like Friday the 13th Part 4 should be the blueprint that they look at to get that franchise back on track. All right, our next category is underrated modern horror. And there was only one movie I could think of. Not only is this one of the most underrated modern horror movies of all time, it's pretty much one of the most underrated movies of the 21st century so far, as it's from one of the biggest directors of all time, Quentin Tarantino. But I feel like more people than have not seen this movie than have seen it. And of course, I'm going to be talking about 2007's Death Proof.
Well, Pam, which way are you going? Left or right?
Right.
That's too bad.
Why?
Well, because it was a 50-50 shot on whether you'd be going left or right. You see, we're both going left. You could have just as easily been going left, too, and if that was the case, it would have been a while before you started getting scared. But since you're going the other way, I'm afraid you're gonna have to start getting scared immediately.
Once again, I do not know how so many people have not seen this movie. It's a Quentin Tarantino directed, Kurt Russell starring, Rose McGowan, Rosario Dawson, Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in this movie. It is absolutely fantastic. I rewatched it just this morning before recording this podcast just to have it in my brain. Is this movie as good as I remember it? No, it wasn't as good as I remember it. It was 1,000 times better than I remember it. And a reason why I feel like this movie has kind of been forgotten over the years is it was part of the Grindhouse release, which was with Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez. They released that big collection of movies between Planet Terror and Death Proof. And Planet Terror at the time was the one that took over. That was Robert Rodriguez's addition to the collection, which was about the zombie outbreak, the girl with the machine gun leg, Bruce Willis and everything. Yeah, that one really, really took over. But looking back, Death Proof is the way better of the two movies, but it's less... So the intent with the Grindhouse movies was to recreate that Grindhouse theatrical experience. And Quentin is a dude who worked in the movie theaters and would constantly go to the movie theaters that would show those kinds of movies. And I'm a big fan of those movies. They're ridiculous, they're over the top, but they're extremely, extremely entertaining. And don't get me wrong, Planet Terror is a lot like some of the movies that you would see in a Grindhouse theater, but Death Proof is exactly like one of those movies that you would see in a Grindhouse theater, especially the first half of the movie where, you know, they even have the weird cuts and everything, the film, the filter on the film, with the graininess and everything behind it, the weird cuts and the blistering of the film that would occur. He leaves all of that in there. And then the second half of the movie turns into a little bit more of a modern movie when it switches to Zoe Bell, Rosario Dawson, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character in that. But the big thing with this movie is Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell plays a serial killer named Stuntman Mike. It's just one of the most creative ideas that a movie's ever had for a killer, where has this stunt car, and it's supposed to be a death-proof car, but only the driver's side is. And, I mean, you see the scene with Rose McGowan, and it's absolutely outstanding. And plus, this movie, and this is something that Tarantino is very, very well known for, is having an astounding soundtrack in his movie. But Death Proof has his most unique soundtrack, and honestly, probably his second best of all time, just behind Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So, Death Proof. Highly recommend you watch it. It is a very, very dialogue-heavy movie, as you can expect from Quentin Tarantino. I know for some people, when they're watching a horror movie, that's kind of the last thing they want to see. But trust me, you want to stick with it, because this movie, I'm just going to say it right now. Here on the Watch It podcast, I declare that Death Proof has the greatest motion picture ending of all time. And it's not even close, in my opinion. It's really not. It's not even close. Death Proof, far and away, has the best ending of all time. It is hilarious. It's badass. It's fitting. It's exactly what you want out of this movie. Plus, it has one of the most grotesque scenes ever put to screen. That happens about halfway through the movie. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss out on that. Just like you are not going to want to miss out on going to Dread Hollow this year. Like I said, all you got to do is shoot me a DM on Instagram. Tell me what the highest grossing movie of 1996 was. If you're one of the first people to send me that, I'm going to hook you up with some tickets to Dread Hollow Revolt this year. I go every year. I love it. I cannot wait to see you there. Also, don't miss out on opportunities from our other ESPN Chattanooga shows like The Word with G and Press Row. Also, can head over to the ESPN 95.3 app or the ESPNChattanooga.com page that I love so much and enter to win by clicking the banner on the homepage. But there you go. You have two Ultimate What to Watch guides back to back. That is 12 movies and two TV shows to keep you busy this October. And I promise you, I'm not done with the spooky content. I still got to see Barbarian. I still need to see Halloween Ends. And you know, I'm going to be right here when that comes. So thank you guys so much for listening to the Watch It Podcast.